Welcome to the Dave the Mystic Show. This is episode number 676 with astrologer and author Julian Venables. This is April 22nd, 2024 from Littleton, Colorado. This show was pre-recorded on April 19th, 2024. Please consider signing up for show announcements through my website at www.davethemystic.com. Our returning guest tonight is Julian Venables. Between 2008 and 2019, Julian wrote daily horoscopes for the New York-based celebrity website You Interview. Julian has been interviewed on BBC Radio Sussex and appeared on local TV channel Latest TV in his hometown of Brighton. He has taught astrology at all levels and currently teaches one-to-one tuition online on Zoom. Julian was chairman of the Brighton and Hove Astrology Circle for 12 years from 2011 to 2023, who hosts regular webinars from astrologers all over the world. He published his first novel, The Astrologer's Apprentice, in 2015, available on Amazon and Kindle. He adapted it into a screenplay called The Prediction, which got the interest of Oscar-winning actor Jeffrey Rush. He has also published his first nonfiction self-help book called The Divine Order. Julian is currently working on The Divine Order Parts 2 and 3, which will be published in 2024. He is also working on developing a series of young adult fiction novels for which he originally had the ideas for back in the early 2000s. All of his future writings will be aimed to surge ahead into the Aquarian Age. His other interests include Buddhist meditation and mindfulness, yoga, cooking, ancient history and development of civilizations, visiting mystical and sacred sites, following ley lines and earth energies, walking the dog, and walking for fitness. He has been blessed with time spent traveling all over the world, raising his beautifully kind, intelligent, and talented daughter, whose date and time of birth he was lucky enough to be able to select in advance, with his wonderfully gifted and supportive wife. They now enjoy life on the south coast of England, and he is delighted to share his life's work with those who are feeling the calling to up-level some part of their existence. Welcome, Julian. Thank you for being on the show again.
Hello, Dave. Thanks for calling me back.
Yeah. So you've been an astrologer for a long time, and you've evolved as an astrologer. Tell us a little bit about how it started and where you've gotten to now.
I discovered astrology in 1988 when I was 21 years old. And I met two astrologers, actually, a husband and wife. And they said, "Oh, have you ever had your chart done before?" And I was like, "No, what's that?" and they said, "Well, we'll do it for you." So I gave them my birth data, my birth details. And it took them, and this is the days before computers, so it took them a few days to come back to me. But then we met again, and they had this piece of A4 paper with a mathematical circular diagram and all these numbers and calculations and symbols of planets. And mm-hmm. I said, "Well, what's all this?" And they said, "Well, these are the planets." I just looked at the chart for a minute and I just said, I always remember the first thing I said, which was, and this is kind of like what I've always championed ever since, really, is that why wasn't I taught this at school? Yeah, because to me, right there and then was this complete system of like describing what was in the heavens was going to affect my life. And I always thought, do you know what? That's what astrology really is about. If we were taught this at school, not only would it make us really keen to learn math, but we'd also be combining and linking in things like use of language, literature, art. I mean, it's just everything. Astrology is actually everything, you know? People were, students, pupils, they'd be a lot more keener to know about, if they were knowing about themselves as they went through school, I'm sure that school would become a much more of an enjoyable experience and therefore make nicer, happier people mm-hmm. as a result, astrology is to know yourself, it's to understand yourself. And that's what I realized. That's what I thought was the thing I had to, that's what I had to do, mm-hmm. So I've always approached it as a thing that one can learn oneself. So I think my speciality is readings. I like really giving readings. And I'm getting more into writing these days as well.
Okay, good. So charts obviously have some value in that you look at the natal chart, how it was when you were born, and that can be like a forecast of challenges and opportunities in your life, but you can also continue to progress that chart forward, correct? To a particular day, whether it's something significant coming up for an event, or if you're looking for an auspicious day, say to get married or something.
Definitely, there are good days and not so good days. There are challenging times and then very propitious times, or fortunate, or providential times. So really, it's a case of knowing how to take action and when, sometimes though a difficult aspect can push one to work harder or to be more motivated, and it's just how it's how one takes it to be, because some challenges really help people move forward, whereas the easy stuff sometimes is so easy going that people don't realize that they could get a lot out of it if they did something with it. So it's like, oh, people notice the bad and difficult things in life, don't they? They're like, oh my God, it's so this, it's so that, it's so challenging. And actually, sometimes then it's like, oh, I'm sitting around just enjoying, not doing this and this and this. And actually, those are the things that if you did take action on those, and when you're not, when things are easy, it's because things are actually going well. And therefore, things could really go well if you acted on it.
Now, say somebody has something in their chart that would suggest to you that they could become a very good creative writer. That doesn't mean that they can just sit down and write the novel. They still have to go through the work of learning it, correct?
Yeah, there's definitely rules to writing. I mean, for writing to be accepted, to like pitch publishers or, to get a literary agent, pitch publishers, get published, or write a screenplay and get noticed, have it by a production company and get commissions for it and things. You have to follow the rules. There are very strict rules to creative writing. You have to know how to construct a story and tell a story. But the thing is once you know the rules, then you can break the rules. No. So, for example, let me say in the films, you could someone like Quentin Tarantino, just an example, right? He completely shattered the movie paradigm. He learned exactly how to make a movie, how to tell a story, and then he broke it up into pieces and moved all the pieces around. And that's very clever, and he was one of, I think, one of the first, I think probably there was a director in the 1950s or doing something, but he was one of the first people in the modern age to really do that. And it's clever. It was so smart, So that's the understanding that you can make the rules, but once you know them, then you can break them and do whatever you want,
But having it on your chart doesn't mean that you can just sit down and do it. You still have to pay your dues, so to speak. But you may enjoy much more success than somebody else who doesn't have it in their chart, correct?
Well, people will find they have predilections. They'll have a notion of where they want to go and what they want to do with their life. And that's usually the planets in the signs in the houses. It's telling them what to do. So they start moving forwards with whatever it is. Sometimes people have awakenings. The younger you are, the easier it is to suddenly go, oh, I know what I need to be doing. It's got to be this. Once as you as we get older, we settle into structuring our lives and routines, and so the world starts to get a little smaller once you get to a certain age. You know what I mean? Like once you get to 50, for example, it's things start to sort of concretize a bit more, crystallize. But in the early years, the word, the literally the phrase "the world is your oyster" is quite possible, isn't it? I would encourage young people to always travel, always do things that they want to do. Later on, try and build the skills earlier, so that you can use them again later.
Well,
But
one of the observations I've seen is that most of the Nobel Prize winners in math and physics and science, they did the work that got them the Nobel Prize before they were 35. And most of
yes,
them
yeah.
did not have significant or comparable achievements after that age. You know,
Yeah.
there's it's kind of like some of the fire was out of the furnace.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So it's, but then funny enough though, with writing, it can work the other way. Yeah. So say particularly novel writing or non-fiction, fiction writing, for example. Some people start much older, some people wait and don't write their first book until their 50s or beyond. There are people who are writing at, start writing at 70, but you can be guaranteed that the book they're going to write is pretty amazing because they've had all that life experience. So when they develop characters and when they write about characters, they're writing from pretty much their own life experience. And so therefore, there's usually a lot more of a deeper meaning behind the content of the content of the story, So yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
You've done a lot of readings. In your experience, what percentage of people show up already doing the thing that when you do their first chart, is strongly expressed in a chart, so it's no surprise to you?
I try to set up a narrative with the client, so I get them talking. It's very important to get the client talking. Because what the client will do will speak their own chart, so they'll speak their own experience, and then I can see that in the chart, so that puts it into context. So in a good reading, the way to do it is to listen carefully to the client, then see them say the things that they're saying, and see it for the astrologer has to then see that in the chart, and then put that into context to then offer them up how to create solutions. So solution focus.
That makes a lot of that makes a lot of sense to me, because one of the things I've tried is like a lot of other people, where you use an online horoscope generating piece of software, and it comes in chunks, but it doesn't weave the story between the chunks. This planet here means this, blah 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 blah, and but it doesn't get a narrative that flows. So what you're saying makes a lot of sense.
I mean, it took me, I was doing my first stage of reading charts when I was saying that literally that, oh, you've got this planet and that sign, it means this. Yeah. And I was doing that for 10, at least 10 years, at least 10 years of that, and then I did things like NLP and stuff like that. So I'd sort of combine it all together, And then I forgot the NLP, but I got stuff, I took bits from it, and understood it enough to, so that created a sort of transformation in the way that I do readings. Then I forgot all about it. I don't use NLP anymore, but it's got some stuff in there that I could kind of just experience, I think, and knowledge of it. And then I got into a thing called metaphors, which I thought was really good. And gradually that's then developed. Then I decided it was time to write a book, novel. And then I got back into readings again, and I sort of really realized then that the client speaks, I knew it all along, but the client speaks their own chart, and it's really important to listen to them and ask them questions, and actually be really open and honest. I'm here to read your chart type of stuff. Tell me what's going on in your life so that I can put it into context for you. And that's really the key. And a lot of the time, clients just want to talk about themselves anyway. That's actually what they're doing. They're looking for a way to talk about themselves, someone who's going to listen. So, that's another absolute winning formula. It's like a form of life coaching as well. Say, well, where are you now? Where do you want to go? And how can I help you? Kind of stuff. That's my sort of approach these days.
Now, I have a similar experience with my clients. Is I may wear four or five different hats. I may jump into past lives, I may jump into this, but I may jump into pragmatic things about they're having difficulties with finances. Well, where can they get help? What should they look out for? Should they see a lawyer? Things like that. And so I have a lot of practical experience too. So yeah, I think there's an advantage to being a gray-haired older person who is providing these services, because even if you haven't been through the ringer yourself, you've heard the stories of many people who have, and you may be able to offer advice to others as they look at their future map, and you say, "Well, there be dragons here. You better watch out."
Yeah. It's nice to be able to tell people that, you know, that there's a pattern sometimes in their chart that they need to know about. You know, I like because then they get it, you know. It's like I can explain, you know, look back in time at these years, and I can track out the years and say, look, what is there a repeat? Can you see that repeating pattern? And when they do, and then they know, you know, and they're like, oh, that's what it is. And it's like, well, you know, so that's coming up next in, say, you know, this amount of time. So be ready for that and learn to change it to your advantage. You know, that's what they've got to do.
Well, something I run into a lot, and I don't know if it's in the chart, you can tell me, and that's I have a client, and they have a close relative, maybe a parent, maybe a grandparent, somebody who is either in the process of dying or has died, and they have another bad actor in their family who has manipulated the estate and is attempting to take away all of their inheritance, and even to the point of forcing a codicil on the person who's close to death, having them sign it even though they're not competent, and then manipulating the estate. Does that show up in charts that, gee, you're likely to be screwed out of your inheritance? Is there a flag for something like that?
There's an area of the chart called the eighth house,
Okay.
and that's very much to do with inherit. That's the area of the chart that's ruled by inheritances.
Okay.
So you'd be looking then at planets in the eighth. So anything in the eighth house or the ruler of the eighth house, and if there's planets in the eighth, then the aspects to other planets, so that you can tell a story, you can see a story in the chart
Okay.
to do with things like inheritance. Oh yeah, definitely. And I've often seen that as well. So I could say, clients, you know, well, what's going on here? You know, is there something that you know? And in fact, you know, I even had someone the other day.
Well, you have a couple thousand years in the UK of written histories of legacies and inheritances and genealogy. So you have a lot more longer experience than we have here.
Yeah, but we, you know, we all, I mean, when it comes to things like past lives and stuff, I see that I believe that we stay in the same family lines, the same
Okay.
ancestors' lines, but we come back with a different persona, different character, different name, but we're in the same lines. Yeah.
Yes.
So they're kind of like the lines are like spiritual threads, you know, and you have lives. And so. My consciousness, when I contemplate, I sometimes feel my ancestors are talking to me. And that to me is like a kind of like spiritual advice.
Now, I run into some people and I explain to them, I say, well, if you look at, so you have two parents and four grandparents and eight great grandparents and 16 great great grandparents, you can rapidly see the problem that, you're going to be related to a whole lot of other people distantly because you're going to start having overlap in those ancestors. There aren't enough people that existed to produce you out of this family tree if you said it was distinct from everybody else. And so, I think there is a lot of intertwining with other people and also the lineage you're talking about, and feeling the presence of ancestors, and having a commonality with other people who, if you did the genealogy, you might go back eight generations, but you're related to them. Just because you run out of the number of people needed to have a distinct family tree.
I've got a quite interesting family tree, you know. I mean, it goes back quite a long way, and different branches, you know. There's quite a lot of you know. I find it interesting, you know. find it interesting.
Yeah, me
Do a little
too.
bit of studying of it. But there's a lot of them I haven't met. But yeah, it's just the way it goes at the moment. There's some interesting things. But I don't think that's another story. You know what I mean? but yeah.
Well, one of the things we got.
Eclipses are interesting. You know, there's some eclipses right now. I mean, right now we're on the 19th of April, aren't we, 2024? And there's just been a pair of eclipses. And eclipses are often bring up a great change, you know. So maybe you'd like, should I tell you a little bit about eclipses, Dave?
Yes, please do. Please do. I like your take on how they influence people and how they show up in charts.
Sure. Thank you. So, eclipses happen. They happen in pairs and they happen twice a year. So they're 2 weeks apart, twice a year. So you usually get a full moon followed by a new moon, or a new moon followed by a full moon, which is the 2 week separation, right? And then they are 6 months. So you get two eclipse seasons a year consisting of two eclipses. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And they are across the chart from each other. So one pair, so they activate basically an axis of two zodiac signs in the chart, right?
Okay.
So example being, right now, we have just had eclipses in Aries and Libra. Okay, because Aries and Libra are across the chart. If you imagine a chart wheel, it's got 12 portions to it, 12 slices, if you like. And Aries and Libra are across from each other in opposition. So there's two signs across from each other. And the eclipses currently are happening in Aries and Libra for 18 months. So there's, it's about a year to 18 months. So there'll be Aries and Libra eclipses, and then there'll be another pair of those, and then it'll go into Pisces and Virgo for a couple of years, for 18 months, then it will go into Aquarius and Leo, and so forth. And so you get these eclipses firing off in pairs of signs that are across from each other. Does that make sense as well?
Yes.
So a pair of signs is are very different. They have similarities, but they're different. So it's like yin and yang, you know, hot and cold, light and dark, asleep and awake, you know, polarities in life. Yeah. So a pair of zodiac signs that are across the chart from one another, one does it one way and the other does it the other way. Yeah. Now, Aries Libra is very focused on relationship. Yeah. So on relationships, because Libra must have a relationship in order to function properly. It has to be in relating. And Aries is actually very individual and likes to be on its own, but realizes it needs relationship. Yeah. So Aries says, well, I'm an individual, I do things my own way, but learns to relate. Yeah. Libra must relate, but then learns eventually that maybe it can also do things itself. Right. So that's the axis, it's relationship axis. So at the moment, we're going through these important eclipses that are pushing us to learn about relationships and how to relate to others. So the two eclipses that have just occurred, which happened basically at the end of March and then just a few days ago, were about to do with how we relate to others. And so there would have been everybody in some form or other, most all people, would have had some sort of experience to do with a relationship of a kind. That can just be like a friendship relationship, you know, like knowing someone, you know, but being tied in to something, you know, and then working out, well, how can I, you know, because is this a relationship I should be pursuing? Is this something I should not do anymore? You know, because eclipses bring about the options for change. So with an eclipse, often the situation is a full moon eclipse, which is when the sun and the moon are opposite each other, is something comes to light that can then be let go of. Or, you know, from that point, because it becomes very conscious, that's what it is. And do I need to do that? Probably not. Yeah. So it can be let go of. The new moon eclipse, whenever the new moon eclipse comes around, is something, you know, it's the idea that one door closes and another door opens. So a new moon eclipse is something new coming into life. There's something new that can start, something begins. And so in order to, so you can either have a beginning followed by an ending or an ending followed by a beginning in the pairs of eclipses. And then it's to do the other thing involved. So it's the sun and the moon are the two planets involved in the eclipse. Because as you know, as you've experienced, you saw an eclipse last week in person. You went to see one, as you were telling me earlier. And the moon covers the sun. Yeah. So it's the sun and the moon involved.
You know? Right.
And the other thing that's involved are what are called the nodes. And the nodes, you have a north node and a south node. Now, this is all to do with how the moon interacts with the ecliptic. So I'm going to, that gets astronomical.
Okay.
So I don't think I'm going to talk astronomy here because I don't think, that, you know, it can go over people's heads too quickly. But what I'll say is there are two nodes in the chart. And in Hindi, in Vedic astrology or Hindu astrology, the nodes are called Rahu, the head of the snake, and Ketu, the tail of the snake. So there's a head and a tail. The idea that it's one has a forward motion and the other takes you back. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's forwards and backwards. Yeah. So when you get an eclipse on the Rahu or the head of the snake or the north node, then you're that's really is the door opening, the way forwards, the way to go. Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of the motion that, you know, and it's usually considered to be reasonably, although it all depends on each person's chart, because everyone has a different story to tell, you know, and a different experiences. But generally speaking, the Rahu North Node eclipses are quite positive. Generally speaking, they tend to have a lot more of a, I know what I've got to do, you know, feeling about them. The south node eclipses, of which the next south node eclipses will be happening now in 6 months' time, are usually to do with relationship, to do with letting things go, and maybe have a slightly more not so positive quality about them. Therefore, a little bit more, but I'm not going to say negative. I'm not going to say unfortunate. I'm going to say something that has a sort of karmic repercussion to them. So it's like, I'm being dragged back to something. Yeah. I have to go and relive something again or redo something. And that's what those eclipses will be in 6 months' time.
Okay.
So the ones we've just had are kind of like a north node eclipse. Because that's where the sun is right now. The sun is on the north node or very close to it, or just has been.
Okay.
Close to the north node. So it's wherever the sun and the north node are, it's where the... But 6 months' time, there'll be the sun on the south node.
Okay.
And that will be the slightly, possibly not so good. But then again, as I said, everyone has a different story. You know, sometimes going back to something can be absolutely positive for someone. Can be a really good thing to do. Oh yeah, I've got to go back to what I was doing before.
Now you talk about relationships. Are these all kinds of relationships, not just romantic? They could be friends, they could be family, they could be business.
Absolutely any area of life, because everyone, the 12 houses of, you know, the chart, it's 12 major different areas of life that the chart maps out, you know. And everything's found in those areas. So, it can be related to anything or anybody, you know.
Well, one of the things I noticed in the past couple of weeks is, I don't believe in coincidences, my wife and I like to go on cruises. And the last cruise we went on, we bought a future cruise package that had a lot of different benefits. And I've been booking some future cruises and spending a lot of time with customer service people. And there have been some pleasant surprises there in terms of benefits that I was going to get that I didn't realize they were there, and they confirmed them, and things like that. So it's generally been a very positive experience, not an experience of, oh, well, if you read the fine print, you know, you don't get this or that, that type of thing. So that's worked out well for me.
Good, good, excellent. Yeah, yeah. So that north node is showing you the direction towards the future, you know, is to get the package of growth package, you know, do, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. It sounds about right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So
well,
do you have another question?
On the 1 6 months from now, since they'll be in different pair of houses, correct? Or will that still be in the same one?
Can you say that again, Dave, please?
The pairs of eclipses we'll have in 6 months from now, will those still both be Aries and Libra?
They'll still be, yeah, they're in Aries this time. So we just had a new moon eclipse in Aries on the north node.
Uh-huh.
And so that gives that direction of like, oh, that's what I've got to do. I mean, it's to tell you more about it, it was actually conjunct Chiron as well, which brings in a whole other area of astrology to talk about, because Chiron is the wound, it's called the wounded healer.
Wounded healer,
it's a very
yes.
Mythological,
I've heard
very,
of that.
Very sensitive point. And the eclipse was exactly on it. So it was the sun, moon, and Chiron all together. And for some people, that was excruciatingly painful. You know, I mean,
right.
It was a very, very challenging time. Because we were forced to be to understand that we need healing in some way or other, you know, about something, about previous hurts, rejections, all sorts of things like that, you know, been very possible. And it's a very painful point, Chiron, but it does give us a deeper healing as well, you know. So that's also quite important, you know, to get a kind of where do we need our healing? And this eclipse, I think, has shown us that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for some people, very difficult. But also then releasing, you know, it's like, oh, I don't need to do that old thing anymore. I can be doing something different, you know. I can,
yeah.
You know.
Well, that could be similar to relationships between countries, too, right? With some of the conflicts we're having, that type of philosophy would stir them up.
Absolutely. And funnily enough, the eclipse was in Aries, which is Mars ruled. Yeah. And Mars is all to do with conflicts.
Yeah.
So actually, this is why, I mean, to sort of slightly go into the political realm here. But you know, Mars is conflicts. And yeah, so how is it going with all this fighting at the moment? You know, people are actually really seeing it and saying, can't we heal ourselves from this now? You know,
yeah.
Isn't there a different way to look at it? Well, there is. There very much so is. You know, it's just a case of seeing where we can, you know, whether the politicians will listen, you know, it's, you know. Wars are all more about stimulating economies than wars.
Yeah.
The fighting is all about. But then you see, I'm entering into a political realm, and I maybe.
Yeah. Well, let's use this as a segue to go into how do you use astrology to help people on their spiritual paths? What do you see there? What kind of coaching do you give them based on what you see?
Well, I'm fascinated for all of the holistic arts. I think everything has a purpose and a meaning, and we are multifaceted, very complex beings. You know, one thing is guaranteed: is once we're born, we're going to live up, we're going to grow our lives, and then we're going to die eventually, pass on to the next life. You know, I mean, it's like a temporary time zone that we're in, if you like. You know what I mean? We're born onto the earth to have an experience. And we gather together everything we can with that, you know, and so that's quite spiritual in itself, is the recognition that there's a certain time frame, but pretty much guaranteed to have worked out most of it, you know, by the time we get old, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that astrology fits in with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, astrology fits in with everything. So because it's such a vast system of understanding, but primarily what I've been trying to do this last few years is to show the astrology community, as well as any, you know, clients and anybody else, yeah, through workshops and talks and
uh-huh.
the difference between awareness and consciousness. Because I think that awareness, we're born with it, we're born with pure awareness, and then consciousness develops from that. So mm-hmm. from the moment of birth, we then move forwards into consciousness, and consciousness is a development of memory over time.
Yeah.
So that when I was born, there was just this wowness. Nothing had a name, nothing had a shape. There was no, you know, there was no consciousness developed around things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I was born, you know, that was a something. It was an object. It didn't have a name
mm-hmm.
or a shape or a meaning, or, you know, I couldn't tell that was red and the frame was black, and what this was and
mm-hmm.
what its purpose is. And, you know, so, but as I grew up, I learned all about this and it became an object. So my consciousness, it took on parts of, so it then had mm-hmm. a meaning. So the point being is awareness. We have that original state of awareness. Now, when you rediscover, if you rediscover that original state of awareness, then it's like a cleansing of the spirit. You know, it's like mm-hmm. an incredible cleansing experience, because you can have a kind of like a enlightenment process. It's like enlightenment. And so I worked out some, or I discovered some very interesting sort of Zen-based experiments that I've written about in a book. So I've published a book called The Divine Order, which I don't know. I've talked about it. This about with this before, but I know this is a podcast, but it's my book, which is available on Amazon. Am I allowed to talk about it, Dave?
Yeah, oh, please do.
This is a book that I've written, and I'm very proud of it. It describes a sort of like the idea of how to rediscover our spiritual center, you know, mm-hmm. the center. We have a very spiritual center, and it's so. Yeah, it's The Divine Order, available on Amazon. So please do buy a copy, because it's beautifully edited and produced. I could explain some of the experiments to you.
Oh, please do.
I show. Thank you. I show how to, what I call the a real opening of the third eye. So that's a really quite amazing experiment. But it's really about just finding our awareness at center. So if I could go through I'll go through an experiment with you now, Dave. Which you know you might be interested
sure,
to follow,
sure.
So see if you get this. So to do this experiment, you need to have a pointing finger, okay? So you need mm-hmm. to have to create with your hand, and you have to follow me as you do this, okay? As a pointing finger, right? So please do that.
Okay.
And then to look around the room that you're in, or the space that you're in, and for this experiment, you have to ignore any camera, mirrors, reflective surfaces, okay? You just have to ignore all that. So pretend that you're not looking at a screen or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know? Or a mirror. You know, don't want to be looking at any mirrors or reflective surfaces, okay?
Right.
In order for this experiment to work. So you start with a pointing finger, and in the space that you are in now, in the room that you are in, take note as you to point just to some objects, external things from yourself,
mm-hmm.
things outside of yourself, objects around the room that you know what they are, and register with yourself that your consciousness is picking up some what it is. Yeah, so I'll give you an example, right? So with my pointing finger, I'm going to point to a book. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to say, that book is, I know what that book is. I know what's inside that book, you know? My consciousness is telling me already, not only can I read the title, it's a book shape. It's in the form of a book. It mm-hmm. has a color, it has a title, it has shape. And I know immediately what's in there, right?
Right.
So that's an example, right? And then I'll say something else. You know, I'm going to point to, you know, like a sort of a bottle of supplements, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here's some supplements. You know, I know what they are, blah, 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 blah. I know what's in them, you know. Does that make sense? Right?
Yes.
And then I'm going to point to, you know, my phone, you know, the phone, you know, it's an object of a, it's the shape of a phone. And I know what's in that, you know, I can point at a pen, you know, so this is a it's like a Sharpie, you know, it's a marker pen, but I recognize its color. It's gray with a black lid. I know what it does. I know the shape of the letters, you know, you know what I mean? Right. So it's, it's going to be, so I'm recognizing the objects in the space around me, and everything has a name, a shape, and a form. Agreed?
Yes.
Okay. So if you do that now with your pointing finger, just take the time and point things out. You know, I point up there, I can see a ceiling fan with lights on it. You know? So just things like that, right? So do that now, you know, go around the room, a little bit around the space that you're in, and just have your consciousness recognize things. Exactly that. That's correct. This is what I want you to be doing, And you're doing it outside of yourself. So you're pointing to things that are outside and recognizing external things. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Now, having done that, right, is I now want you to take your pointing finger, the same pointing finger, and I want you to point at your foot.
Okay.
So you're pointing at your foot, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm doing that now, right? I'm pointing my foot, and it's got a sock on it, you know, right? It's just my foot. I know that it's a familiar shape, you know? And then I want you to move the pointing finger up to your knee, right? Oh, yeah, there's my knee. You know, it's got a rounded shape, fabric on it, you know, what I would always expect to be, but it's my knee. Yeah. And with the pointing finger, I want you to point to your torso. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I'm pointing at the torso, and I'm wearing a blue and green shirt. I can see the buttons. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
And then with the pointing finger, I want you to carry on moving upwards until you're pointing at the space where others see your face.
Okay.
So now I want you to relax with that for a minute. Do this, right? So you're relaxing. You've got the pointing finger pointing at the space where others see your face. Now, you've done all, and keep it there, keep it there. Just focus on that pointing finger pointing back at you. Because what you've been doing so far is you've been pointing out at external objects, and you've been giving them names, shapes, colors, forms, and your consciousness has been fully activated by the things around you, correct?
Correct.
But now, how can you describe, how would you describe what you're pointing at? Now, how would you describe what you're pointing at? Quite difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because what are you pointing at?
Well, I'm pointing at what others would see in my face.
Yeah, but what do you see? Do you, in fact, just see the whole world?
Right? Yeah.
I'm pointing back. I'm now pointing back at the space where others see my face. But what I actually see is, the question is, do I see my own face?
No.
No? No. I see the whole world, don't I, in that space?
Yes.
And therefore, would it be right to ask myself this question? Have I ever seen my own head, or have I ever seen my own face? And I'm talking no mirrors, cameras, right? Yeah. So have I ever seen my own face?
No.
But I have grown up or lived with this space, which is in me, right? The space is in me, isn't it? Yeah. So here I'm pointing at, and in fact, where others see my face is lovely. There's Julian, there's his face, you know. But I've never seen my face, and I've not actually ever seen my head either. And in fact, what am I pointing back at now? Am I not pointing back a vast capacity, like a huge space? Because when I move around, right, with the pointing finger, move around a little bit, I move around, and the whole world moves with me, with that space. So the whole world is in my space around me as I point back at it. Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there's this vastness. Yeah. It would appear to me that I contain this vastness that I can't even name it. I can't name it. I can't say it's a color. I can't say it's a shape. I can't say it because It's everything. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. So with that pointing finger, I now want you to take the other hand with the other, create another pointing finger and put them like this, so two ways, like that. So you're pointing one
okay.
that way and one that way. Yeah, that's it. And then point back at your face again. Point back at the space that your face has. So you've got a finger pointing out and a finger pointing in. That's it. Perfect.
Okay.
And you can ask yourself at this point, is there a dividing line? Because there isn't, is there? Right? There's no actual dividing line.
No. Yeah?
It just isness. Yeah. It's just this isness. It's just this vastness. And it's actually a part of me. I'm sort of in the vastness. Yeah. But I'm not a shape or a form in the vastness because the vastness is me. I can't specifically point it out, the vastness, when I'm recognizing that everything in that space I'm in is everything.
Right.
So now you can put the pointing fingers down. And I'm going to ask you now to close your eyes.
Okay.
We're moving to the next experiment. Okay. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Because, and we're going to keep them closed for about a couple of minutes while I just ask you a few questions. Okay. So, with your eyes closed, has that space gone away? Or are you still aware, awareness, are you still aware of the space being there with the eyes closed? Well, personally, I am aware of that space still being there. I
well,
pointed
through,
out
through my, my physical senses, I think there's a space still there.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a sort of like a sort of vast inner space, isn't there? But can we measure, with the eyes closed, can we measure any distance inside it? Can you measure left and right when your eyes are closed? No,
no.
I can't. Can you measure up and down? I can't do that either. Can you measure forwards and backwards? I can't do that either. When I'm talking to you in this space, is the voice just kind of landing in the space, right? Because it's the senses are picking up sound. But it's landing in that space. And that space, when I sort of move around inside it, it seems like it could go on forever, you know, because it's like a vast inner space. And yet, of course, at nighttime, when I dream and my eyes are closed and I'm dreaming, then this becomes a whole new world. It becomes a very enlivened space in which I move around and traveling and experience a whole world inside of that. So what I'm receiving, though, is I'm receiving lots of information all the time. So the fact that I'm sat in a seat, I can, my sensory responses are giving me seat, you know, seat of sitting in a seat, you know. But
yeah.
If I didn't know what that seat was, I'd just be getting a set of sensory responses without being able to call it seat. Yeah, I'd just be receiving lots of information. About, yes, there's some sort of shape and form. So in a way, there's this vastness, and the vastness is infinite. You know, it's like a sort of outer space in an inner space. So I'm going to ask you just to mention how people, some of old creation myths, some of the ancient myths and creation myths from different cultures, they often talk about there was nothing at first, and then suddenly everything appeared. Yeah. In fact, actually, science in the Big Bang experiment does a bit of that as well. They sort of say, well, the universe was born out of nothing. It was nothing. And then suddenly everything appeared. Yeah. And the universe was made and created. Yeah. Well, you can actually do that yourself because you can, on the count of three, you can go, ah, three, two, one, and open my eyes, open your eyes, and suddenly the world comes back. And it's like, oh, everything appears. There was a no thing or a nothing. There was an empty space. And then I opened my eyes and it all got filled up again. And it got filled up with the world, with the whole world. You know, the world of all these objects, shapes, numbers, forms, and everything that I have. The world of measurement.
Yeah,
came back. Everything is like, ah, yes, there it is. All in its familiar place, you know, as I expected it to be, and that's the world that we create around us. That's kind of like the third person objective world. We have an objective world around us, But we can, when we go first person, if we go back, we can go to our center. And our center is this vast space. That vast space has been pointed out as being recognized. When my eyes are open, I'm in that space. When my eyes are closed, I'm also in that space.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a kind of open eye space and a closed eye space.
Mm-hmm.
And they're one and the same. So taking all that into consideration, I now want to show you the next experiment, which is my favorite one.
Okay.
This is called the all-seeing eye. I call it the all-seeing eye experiment, or the opening of the third eye. And so in Hindu chakra diagrams, we see all these amazing lotus flowers and the chakras. You know, you see those diagrams?
Yeah.
They're like the thousand petals on top, you know, opening
right
on top of the crown of the head, and then all the other ones in a column of different, going down different colored lotuses and flowers of many petals. But the third eye, yeah, is just a circle with two petals. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's just a circle with two petals. And if you just do that now with your hand, put one in a circle and then put two petals like this. Yeah, to create two petals. That's right. And then just bring the petals down so they're over your eyes like that. Yeah. And okay. Actually, you know, I look at the world. I always have done look at the world through my two eyes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, though, what if I spread my thumbs and fingers a bit, so it's like a pair of binoculars, I'm acknowledging the two apertures that I look at the world through. But if I spread my fingers and thumbs a bit and start to create a space, it looks like a diver's mask, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And this diver's mask, open it out a bit more, yeah? And I start to see my hands on the edges, yeah,
mm-hmm.
of my peripheral vision. So I wave my fingers at myself, you know? And then I want to take, when your hands are like about a foot apart and they're just each side of your head, I want you to recognize that they're there, so wave fingers. But then I want you to pull your hands backwards so they vanish. Keeping still, you know, but you pull your hands back. And can you see your hands? No, I can't see my hands because they're gone. They're behind my vision, yeah? But I'm aware that my hands are there. I have awareness that my hands are there.
Yeah.
But I can't see them because mm-hmm. I have to bring them forward to see them. So I bring them forward again and they appear just at that edge. Do you see mm-hmm. that? Do you see that edge as they appear?
Yeah.
Do that just a little bit, right? Back and forth. Go on here. And you start to see there's an edge. Yeah. Now that edge is very interesting because you can move it up around here and then there's an edge at the top. You see? So it's like it's actually like this edge all the way around. Yeah. And in fact, it's like a round sphere or an orb. We're inside a sort of orb or a sphere, yeah, all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I sort of look down, yeah, I can't see my own chin. You know, I can't see my chin.
Right.
I can see the line of the buttons going up, and then it vanishes. Yeah. In fact, if I put my hand there, I can't see my hand either. Yeah. But I know that there's an edge there as well, right? So there's this edge all the way around, an orb,
right,
or a sphere that we're inside of, and or that we're part of it. But the sphere contains the whole world, yeah. Because I can't find the edge of the sphere. Where is that edge? If I turn to look for the edge, I don't find it. I just know that there's something there. There's an edge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's behind that edge? Is the no thing. Yeah, there's nothing
right
behind the edge. There's space, there's a void of space, or the nowhere, or the now here. So as you get the no thing or the now here, brings you to the present moment, basically.
Right, right.
When you've got the edge, you then go back. Now, in all the organized religions, in Christianity, you go into the churches and you see the stained glass windows with the halos of the saints.
Yeah,
halo.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And here's the halo. I'm just showing you what the halo is. You know, you look at Buddhism, and Buddha's got a halo, you know, always got that halo around.
Yeah.
All the Christian Catholic, you know, they all have that. In Shiva, in Hindu, Hinduism, he has the Nataraj, the dancing Shiva, in the Nataraj of the circle, the mm-hmm. dancing Shiva. Same in Sufism, they talk about it a lot. In different types of Buddhism, And Christianity, right? So basically, this edge is a very profound edge, you know, that contains the world, yeah? But it also makes you suddenly realize that you have two eyes to see, yeah, two eyes, and then you have the third, yeah? And the third eye is like a singular eye, yeah? It's like a big orb that we that take it on, and it's like becomes a divine connection. So this is how to connect to creation.
Mm-hmm.
And you can add whatever label you like to creation. You know, it's the creation to the creator, the goddess, the god, whoever you choose. But you get the connection to the divine, and you become a far more aware of your awareness, and therefore your consciousness, and therefore have a greater connection to your spirituality, to your divinity.
Mm-hmm.
Because you understand light differently from this point forward. You'll understand light differently.
Yeah.
And it's very healing. I believe it to be very healing. So I've been working with that, and I hope the listeners understood what I was going on through there. What did you make of that day? What did you make of that?
Fascinating exercise. It brings to mind other things that I ponder about, like when you walk somewhere, do you actually walk and cover a distance, or does the planet move underneath you? And most people would say, well, how could it move underneath everybody all at the same time? And I say, well, there's remarkable things energetically. Who knows? But I don't take anything for granted. I want to see what my experience is and ponder the alternatives.
Yeah. You can do one more experiment. If you stand up with a pointing finger, point back at your own face, and then turn in a circle, you know, like a whirling dervish would, just focus on the finger and turn around. That helps find your center. You then realize that the world's turning around you, and you're still and calm at your center.
Right.
And then when you then walk or move, or, you know, the world starts flowing through you, which is really quite divine. I mean, that is just a superb.
Yeah.
It's superb. My favorite one is to just drive, actually, because, of course, you know, when I'm sat in my car, I get into my car and I sit in my car and I start driving. But am I actually going anywhere? Because I'm sat in a seat. And yet the world is flowing through me. Yeah,
right.
It's flowing through me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into that space beyond, right? And that's like what that was. Because in the present moment, everything's flowing through me.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to get on a train, you know, or whatever, you know, a bus or something, you know, then I get on the bus at the bus stop, for example, and I would go into the bus. I would sit in a seat or on a train or whatever. I sit in a seat, and the doors would close. And would I be actually going anywhere, because I'm sat in a seat and I'm not actually moving?
Mm-hmm.
But then the next bus stop appears before me, right? Because I've gone from one thing to the next, yeah? And it's appeared in my space. It's appeared in here,
yeah?
And that's a very spiritual approach to life. It's beautiful. It's mystical, yeah?
It's a little bit like the feeling when you're in a train station that has multiple tracks, and you see the train next to you start moving. Well, you think you're moving, and then you realize that it's disorienting because the background is not changing for you. And you realize that your train isn't moving, it's the one next to you, but it's it kind of takes you out of your space for a moment.
Yeah, it does. And it's quite lovely, it's quite wonderful. And it's very refreshing, you know. To be in that space, because you can choose to be in that space. The ego identity, you know, the persona, and you know, who we are, wants to be third person all the time. And so we can drop back into that third person space of being myself and being, you know, most all the days of life, you know. But if you choose to have a spiritual moment and some quiet contemplation, you can go into the first person, do the experiment, you know, or point back, you know, and discover that again, right? And then you can have a nice calm experience of like, you know what? I'll just be in my space. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, it's very blissful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's very healing. You know, it's very calming. It's very enjoyable, you know, just to them. And if you combine what I've shown you today with, say, mindfulness meditation, yeah, Buddhist meditation,
mm-hmm.
where you just focus on the breath and the sensation of the breath going through the nose, mm-hmm. you know, and then combine it with things like this, can't go wrong, you know. It's super double good, you know. I mean, it's pretty awesome. So I believe that to be something that humanity knew. Everyone knew how to do that 400 years ago, 500 years ago. Everyone knew how to do that
until
Copernicus. Once Copernicus said, we're not geocentric anymore. Earth used to be at the center of the universe and all the planets went around it.
Yeah.
And that brought about, of course, the fear of God, because, you know, my God, you know, God's in control of everything. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
But then Copernicus said, you know, I've got the theory that actually the Earth is going around the sun and the sun is at the center.
Mm-hmm.
Galileo backed it up with telescopes, and suddenly we had this whole new incredible revolution of the shift from geocentric to heliocentric.
Yes.
And that actually put humanity off kilter, because suddenly there's the sun, we're going around the sun, we're not at our center anymore.
Yeah.
And that was a big shift that led to the amazing things of scientific revolution, all the discoveries that we've had. And mm-hmm. the modernizing of our age. But we are, a lot of humanity is really off kilter, right? It is, you know, it's just, it doesn't align to nature.
Mm-hmm.
So what I propose is that we are now not geocentric, we're not heliocentric, but we're humanocentric.
Uh-huh.
So the new way, I think, is now humanocentric, which is to say, each of us is at the center of our own world. Each individual person is at mm-hmm. the center of our own world, and the world revolves around me. I'm not stood on a planet that's unmoving at the center. My planet, you know, can be anywhere, could be heliocentric, could be anything. But in my experience, everything revolves around me. So right. That's the humanocentric movement. And that is what I'm trying to promote.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. At the moment, I'm self-published. You know, I should be pushing this. I should be trying to get a publishing deal. You know, but mm-hmm. who knows? You know, I mean, I need a literary agent. So if there's a literary agent out there, do get in touch.
Well, very good.
But, yeah.
So tell us again the name of the book and where people can get it.
Thank you. It's called The Divine Order, and it's on Amazon. So if you put Julian Venables, Venables, Julian Venables, into Amazon, author Julian Venables, the book is The Divine Order.
Okay.
It's a purple cover with gold writing on it.
Okay. And, wonderful.
I don't know if I've sent you that. You might want to, yeah.
Yeah,
but the experiments are in here. The whole explanation of humanocentricity.
Yeah, the cover is on the show page for listeners.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They can see that. And they can see you. And you also still do private appointments, correct? So people can reach you.
Yeah. I love reading charts. So do get in touch. You know, my website is londonastrologer.co.uk.
Okay.
So I live 50 miles from London. I call myself London Astrologer because I'm close enough.
Yeah, London's a big place. It has long reaches.
Yeah. So I'm londonastrologer.co.uk.
Okay.
And you could actually just put into Google Julian Venables Astrologer and you'll probably find my
website. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So great. Yeah. I mean, do ask me for reading. And of course, as a part of the reading, I'll go through the experiments with you in person, you know, all on Zoom.
Wonderful. Mm. Well, thank you so much for being on the show again. And I think we talked before about having you on a third time, and I still like to look forward to that too, a little ways down.
Great. Well, I'd be honored, Dave. It's a pleasure talking to you. And I do hope you get the most out of the eclipses and everything. you know, wishing you the best of luck. And I, of course, look forward to our next podcast.
Well, thank you very much. And blessings to you and your work. And I hope your book just continues to grow in sales. It sounds like a lot of information that people need.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And
Okay.
see you all again sometime.
Great. And for our listeners, please join us for our show next week with N.T. Hettige discussing his new book, Beyond Our Self-Image. Thanks for listening and blessings.